last week we started to look at Isaiah chapter 40. And before we do that, go back to that passage. This is part two of Waiting on the Lord. That's our topic for these two Wednesdays, based on Isaiah chapter 40. And as I was reviewing what I'd said last week, I became aware that I needed to make some corrections to what I had said and also some clarifications. So to begin with, let's start with the corrections. I said that Judah was Jacob's oldest son. That's not true. I don't know why I thought that, but I did. Just goes to prove you can't trust what you think necessarily. If you want to look for the documentation of this, you'll find it in Genesis chapter 29, verses 31 through 35, which give the account of the birth of some of Jacob's children. So I'll read those verses, Genesis chapter 29, verses 31 through 35. When the Lord, Jacob, if you remember or know, had two wives, Leah and Rachel. And so these are primarily Leah's children to start with, and then finally Rachel's. When the Lord saw that Leah was not loved, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Leah became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She named him Reuben, not Judah. For she said, "It is because the Lord has seen my misery. Surely my husband will love me now." She conceived again, and when she gave birth to a son, she said, "Because the Lord heard that I am not loved, he gave me this one too." So she named him Simeon. Again she conceived, and when she gave birth to a son, she said, "Now at last my husband will become attached to me, because I have borne him three sons." So he was named Levi. She conceived again, and when she gave birth to a son, she said, "This time I will praise the Lord." So she named him Judah. Then she stopped having children. Not one, first, but fourth. And then if you want to continue on with the accounts of the birth of Jacob's children, you can read that in chapter 30 of Genesis, verse 1 through 22, and then in chapter 35, verses 16 through 8. So said that Jacob's son, became the heads of the tribes of Israel. That is their descendants. Have to now. Levi is, as read that the role Aaron and his son was named the work of the tent. There is no that was Levi, place where people and during the time in the wilderness. And you'll see in Numbers verses chapters 3 through 4 that account. And just to back up a bit, if you want a reference for the account of Jacob accepting Manasseh and Ephraim as his own, you see find that in Genesis 48. Now, according to 1 through 20, 10 through 9, birth of Manasseh, 18, 11 in Genesis 40, the Lord, verses 50 through 52, divided cities for divided in the territories controls. Reference to 1 Peter chapter 2, which happens to be the place where Peter quotes from the passage in Isaiah that we read last week. And I just made the assumption that he had the words from Isaiah in mind when he had the words of 1 Peter in mind. So in case any of you are into looking at the liner notes of CDs, I want to make that clear. And then my last correction has to do with the reference I made to a dialogue, a scene from the film My Best Friend's Wedding that starred Julia Roberts. And I referred to a dialogue between Julia Roberts' character and her male best friend and attributed the line about her being lower than pond scum to her man friend who was getting married. In fact, she said it about herself. She said, "I'm pond scum. Well, lower, actually. I'm like the fungus that feeds on pond scum." It's amazing what you can find out on the internet. So now to the clarifications. I said that Isaiah chapter 40 marks a transition from the theme of God's judgment on the people of Israel to the theme of God's restoration of them. And when I said that, I painted with too broad a brush, because it implied that first 39 chapters of Isaiah are all bad news of God's judgment on the people of Israel, and that from chapter 40 on, it's all good news about God's restoration of the people of Israel. And it made it sound as though God was sort of capricious, and he kind of turned on a dime and felt like judging when he felt like it and felt like restoring when he felt like it. And there was no rhyme, seemed to be no rhyme or reason to it. So what I need to say is that there are many significant passages in the first 39 chapters of Isaiah that talk about God's restoration of the people, that show God's mercy on them. And it's almost in every chapter, just to get a running start at it. If you want to make a list, here are some places in some of the first 39 chapters that you can look. You can look in chapter 1, verses 18 through 20, and 24 through 26. In chapter 2, verses 1 through 5. In chapter 4, verses 2 through 6. In chapter 9, verses 1 through 7. In chapter 10, verses 20 through 25. In chapter 11, verses 1 through 13. Actually, that's chapter 11, 1 through 13, chapter 13, verse 6. And in chapter 14, verses 1 through 2. So it'd be more accurate to say that the themes of judgment and rest cities and took together people and as 89 northern kingdom to Isaiah, and that from their those people, the major theme. And I hope that clarifies. I also talked about things from last week, as if any other areas, super, please feel free to ask. Northern kingdom. Chapter 40 takes in Israel and called that Isaiah 7 point C and the people captive, some of, and it also Israelites and beyond back to Assyria time. And after that, I'm after Isaiah invaded Judah, fact, when the people captives to the next superpower, Babylon, the superpower that will conquer the Assyrians. And in fact, it looks beyond that to the time of the Persians, who are the superpower who conquer the Babylonians. So let's take a look now at Isaiah chapter 40. And the very beginning in reading at the very can get a sense of the, so that we can we'll be looking at tonight text for what will be the last be the my people says your comfort my people speak to Jerusalem be to Jerusalem her that are hard proclaim to her completed service has been her completed paid for has been paid for received from the that she has received double for all its hand double sins. Calling in the desert, voice of one calling, prepare the way for the straight in the wilderness, make straight for our God, highway for our God. Every valley, shall, every raised up, made low, the rough ground shall become level, the rugged places a plain, and the glory of the Lord will be revealed, and all mankind together will see it, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. A voice says, cry out. And I said, what shall I cry? All men are like grass, and all their glory is like the flowers of the field. The grass withers, and the breath of the Lord blows on the breath of the Lord. Surely our grass withers, and the grass fall. But the grass fall. God stands forever of our gods. Tidings to Zion, bring good tidings. Go up on a high mountain. Go up, you who to Jerusalem. Bring good tidings to drop your voice with. Lift up your, lift it up, lift it up. Say to the hear, sons of Judah. Here is see the sovereign comes. See the sovereign and his arm power. Rules for him. Lord is with him. See his reward, recompense, and his he tends his flock like a shepherd. He gathers the lambs in his arms and carries them close to his heart. He gently leads those that have young. Who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, or with the breadth of his hand marked off the heavens? Who has held the dust of the earth in a basket? Does God want to deliver us? And hasn't God given up on us? I also said that verses 12 through 26 answered the question, can God deliver us? After all, our defeat by these foreign powers seems to mean that their gods are more powerful than our God. But as we saw last time, Isaiah answers those questions very clearly. Does God want to deliver? Absolutely. Hasn't God given up on us? Not at all. Doesn't our defeat by these foreign powers mean that their gods are more powerful than our God? What other gods? There are no other gods. There's only one. And he's the creator of everything. So tonight we'll study verses 27 through 31 and the return to the questions raised in verses 1 through 11 in light of Isaiah's answers in 12 through 26.